Tonight, I'm very happy to have Roseanne Burritz here. She came into the store, and I have to say, I immediately felt a sense of rapport. And she liked the store, and I had a good feeling about her, and she will be talking tonight about conversations with angelic guides. Thank you so much for coming to Many Rivers.
Thank you. Thank you, Jim, for hosting me. Welcome. Thank you all for coming and for having an interest in the flow of life. I appreciate your support. The flow of life was pre-released in Hawaii in the fall, which was a very supportive environment for me to do some book signings and things because I've lived there for 30 years. So this is my first really mainland, the beginning of the mainland presentations of the flow of life. And I'll be doing a book tour all over the West Coast these next few months. So I'm getting my feet wet here. And this evening I'll speak about my relationship with the flow of life and with the guides. This is a channeled work. And I'm going to share a couple of short guided light meditations. And I'll read from the book and we can have a little discussion if there's questions. Anytime I'm reading or talking, please feel free to have questions. Only during the guided light meditations we won't have them. And then I'll sign books at the end. I'd like to say first that I'm the author of The Flow of Life, but I'm not the writer of The Flow of Life. I have been a clairvoyant my whole life. I've always had a relationship with these angelic beings that I call the guides. And when I was a child, it was a great place of solace for me and connection, very unselfconsciously. I had no clue that everybody wasn't just talking to these guides all the time. And then I slowly became aware that perhaps not everybody was talking to the guides all the time. And then I went through my own process, of course, with this. And as a teenager, I wanted my own space. I didn't want to have these guides knowing everything I was thinking. But then as an adult, well, all throughout my life, even the times when I had distance, I always had this curiosity about what was this? Who were these guides? What was it? And I would ask them, of course, and they would tell me, but I also wanted to place it in the world and see what was it. And so even in high school, I was fortunate to have a situation where I could study different religions and start to be aware that there were mystics, there were clairvoyants, there were psychics, all these different things, and different traditions accepted it and some didn't. And so I've always been fascinated, and as an adult, when I more consciously accepted it and started to develop it again, I remembered so clearly my childhood experiences and how it nurtured me and guided me, and I began to develop again this connection and start to really uncover my destiny and my work as I went. And I knew the book was coming. I had a career. I was a Waldorf teacher for many years and loved it, of course. I was a kindergarten teacher. It's hard not to love it. But I knew the book was coming, and I knew I had to make space for it in my life. And everything just was arranged for me to turn my class over, and to my children grew up, and everything just lined up, and it was time. So I started with the help of my husband Bhagwan, my technical support, started doing these recordings. I would know when, and we would just go to a place. If you look at the book, you'll see it was recorded all around the world. I would know where to go, and Bhagwan would bring a little tape recorder, and I would sit in meditation, and each chapter came in its entirety, word for word. We went through a lot of different editing processes and different things with it, and it's been edited two or three times, but each time either I or the editor or a combination, everyone said, we shouldn't edit it. It's better the way it is. Even though it's conversational, it has a certain geometry to it, and there's something about it that has its own, they have their own vernacular. So it's pretty much, I'd say, 98% word for word. We took out a few and so's and then's, but other than that, that was it. And along with it is this guided light meditations. I knew that was coming as well. I didn't quite get how it was going to fit in. For a while, we thought they would be together. But what I feel now with these guided light meditations, they're a sensorial, developmental aspect of the work. And so that just doing them helps people develop the witness. You start to experience your connection to the light and this feeling, this awareness of the light and creative forces around. And it helps you be less identified with the personality and the body. Because the book is in three different sections. In the first section, the guides gave me questions to ask. And I would ask these questions like, who is God? What's the meaning of life? These kind of questions. And then they would answer those questions from their perspective. I didn't realize at first that it would come through like this, each chapter building on another. It wasn't until I started transcribing the book that a lot of realizations happened for me. For one thing, in transcribing the books, it was the first time that I really heard the guides in my waking consciousness. I had always been in meditation before, and I was just fascinated by what they had to say, how they said it, and it took me literally some years to transcribe the tapes because they were so, I was so involved with it. I just, you know, I could only do a short bit at a time. I would contemplate it. But after the whole thing was recorded and transcribed, I saw how each thing would build, each chapter built on the next. It came in perfect order. At one point, I had a really serious accident, and I couldn't do anything for about a year and a half, almost 2 years. And at that point, I thought, well, maybe the book was done. But the last five chapters came after that. And it was as though it had been yesterday that the last recording had been. It just picked right up where it was. So the book is in three sections, as I said. And the first section is really, they kind of lay out their philosophy of things so that you get a sense of where they're coming from and who they are and what they think about or what they're representing. And then the second section of the book is broken into these paths, the paths of consciousness, really, that we all follow. And one thing I saw when I was transcribing the book and as I read over it again and again and again, I saw that charismatically in the course of my life, I had been shown these paths, that I had walked these paths. I didn't know at the time that that's what I was doing, but it was an initiation path that was given to me without my really being self-conscious of it. But when I would read about them and what kind of things they developed or the mood of them, I could recognize that in my own spiritual journey, in my own meditative life, that for periods of my life I was absorbed in this path. And then there were periods where I was absorbed in that path, and I could see how my life charismatically had unfolded. And I think that a lot of us who are interested in our spiritual reality and involved with our spiritual life find that, even if it's not so intellectually obvious, that our path opens up in front of us. The challenges that come to us feel right, even if they are challenging. We're developing ourselves and we know it. So I recognized that in the work, and it gave me even more of a fascination with the work. The last part of the book, the last five chapters, the guides call those Unraveling the Psychology. And what those five chapters are, very practical ways of working with the learned mind, what we've learned in this incarnation, who we think we are, in being able to develop the witness, to be able to observe ourselves, to be able to make a choice right now in this moment, aware of all the memories and conditioning, but not controlled, so that we're able to take all of our experiences into our decision-making, but we're not just unconsciously working off of stuff that happened to us when we were 5 years old. Instead, we're able to vibrationally then see the difference and feel the difference. And it's not that our obstacles are all removed for us, but it's that our challenges are the challenges we own, that we know them, that we feel they're right. And so that's really kind of the gist of the work. It really prepares people to vibrationally recognize their destiny in front of them and make the differentiation between desire and destiny, desire and inspiration. When I, at a certain point in my life, I really turned my life over to the guidance. and just every aspect of my life, I would just ask, okay, what is it? Which apple should I eat? Which way should I walk? Which everything, from the little tiny things to the very important things. And the tiny things seeming inconsequential were actually the best training, because I just got in the habit always of feeling it out. And it isn't so much that I would go into meditation and ask the guides. It was more like, okay, which one? Which movie should I watch? Oh, this one feels better. Oh, which one? And I was just vibrationally honing myself in to what really felt light, what really felt conditioned or stuck, or what had a charge to it, what doesn't. And the more I did that, the more my life would unfold in front of me. Come in, please. The more my life would open up, and things were offered to me that I never thought I would be doing, and yet there I was doing them, feeling totally right about it, and that it was just the absolutely appropriate thing. And so life started giving me more than what I had asked for, more than what I had anticipated for myself, and different things, always with this sense of what's the right way, which is the better way, which is the lighter way. And so having that differentiation made a huge difference in my decision making. Before I go to reading the book, I would like to share one of the guided light meditations. This is a very short one. It's just going to kind of set us up a little bit for some of the readings. So Claude Wan is going to do his technical wizardry. And here we go. This one is called... Oh, I'll say it on there. Michael, did you bring that illustration of the chakra pain?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. Which one are you doing?
Refresh the mind.
Mm-hmm.
Second meditation, I think it's the third track. In some of these meditations, you know, oh, this one, I'll talk about it after. Refresh the mind. Dear Holy Mother and Father, please let the pure light of God flow through me. So for this meditation, we are going to work more specifically than we worked previously. Sit quietly with your back straight and your attention focused on the area just above the top of your head as a preparation. You are raising the ethers and you are focusing your attention just slightly above your head. You are hovering above your crown chakra. Now you start to see, out in front of you, just in front of the third eye, a blue light. It is like a sapphire, blue, deep blue. Whether you actually physically see the light with your eyes closed, or whether you just know that that blue light is there, either one of these states is fine. You have this blue light now that is in front of your third eye, and you allow it to come in. You allow it to come right in through your third eye, and you allow it to be in your mind. You have this blue light in your mind. It is cleaning up in there. It is moving around. It is creating synapses.
is enlivening the brain function. It is creating awareness of the physical organ of the brain and the energetic of the brain and the skull. There is a feeling of lightness in the head, as though the head is somehow just a little bit separate from the rest of the body. You can feel light start to concentrate a bit in the back of the skull, and you go with that, and you allow your attention to be there. Just experience the light moving around in the brain, enlivening, restoring, waking up. You can feel the face relax as the mind starts to function more properly. You can feel the whole body start to relax as the mind becomes more enlivened and more able to carry out its messages and communication with the functioning of the body. You can feel the base of the skull where it meets the spinal column, and you feel that enlivened. Just be with that light, the light in the mind, in the physical head, restoring, enlivening, calming, and waking up. Breathe normally, and then again, give thanks for the experience of the light, open your eyes, and be on your way.
So these guided light meditations, they go from being very physically activating to also then being very stimulating to the consciousness. They can be really relaxing. And there are 10 of them, and some of them are really for the physical body. There's some for the heart and the circulation, but they all have this effect on the consciousness, a kind of expanded, almost like an expanded repose is what I feel like when I'm done. I feel calm, centered, but really aware. And so I like to do them, even though I can go into meditation. It's great to be able to just do this. The longest one is about 12 minutes. And so to just be able to kind of, I lay down a lot of the time with them. And the one we'll do later, they say to lay down. And I mean, you're welcome to lay down, but you can also sit. So I don't feel like laying on the floor. But a lot of the time, I just lay down comfortably and just let these meditations take me to this light space and back again. So I was guided to read a few different things from the book. And please, if you have any questions or anything after the readings, just say so. One of the things that I really got to talk about tonight was about service, and for some reason, you know, what service is really, and how do you incorporate service in your life? The guides talk quite a bit about service. They talk about the different modes. They talk about working out of a mode of goodness, and oftentimes people do work out of a mode of goodness when they want to do service, but they're in the mind. So they think, okay, what kind of good work can I do? And they think about volunteering, and there's nothing wrong with that. But the guides talk about a service where your life is open to being able to respond to the moment in a way that is really inspired. And one of the things they say is that if you offer yourself, your life, and every day you do that, then these angelic beings, they can set up situations where everybody in the situation is served. And nobody has control of it or creates it, but everyone's involved. And it's a different way of working. So they say, service can be very simple. It doesn't have to be in the mode of these other areas that we've been speaking about, the hospice work, working with the ill, working with orphans. These are very obvious serviceful positions. These are very obviously taken up by people who, with intention and consciousness, want to serve their fellow man. But there is a more subtle side to service, to the path of service, and that is seeing every moment as an opportunity to serve. No matter what is in front of you, there is some way that you can gracefully interact that will be some kind of enrichment, sharing, or enhancement. You can read the stories of different saints and see that many times they were faced with something that seemed insignificant, but by their ability to recognize God there, they were then rewarded with sainthood, acknowledged for their charity. And so this recognition has much to do with it, this service, being able to slow down the mind enough and the will enough to be in the moment, to be able to see what is in front of you as coming from the spiritual world, as every moment is, and to be able to right then determine how you gracefully interact, how you generously share yourself, how with interest you take up the moment. Okay, let's see what they gave us next. Little surprises. Okay, more about service. Ultimate service is really endeavoring to expand the consciousness, to allow yourself to be present in the moment, to interact with the moment in a way that allows the spiritual world to create the scenario that serves everyone. So that means that service isn't necessarily in a mode. It can be anything. It can be the antithesis of what you would think with the mind would be the right thing to do. And I mean, that brings up this idea that we have ideas about what's right and wrong, but sometimes situations come up for us and that moral code wouldn't really serve the situation in the best way. It wouldn't really be the right thing to act just out of a preconceived idea of what's right and wrong, because the situation calls for something else. And so it's good to be flexible enough to be able to feel that morally your heart is there, but what do you perceive in the moment, rather than going on a code that kind of denies the miracle of that moment. So here's a little bit more on service. It says, the mind says, I should give to everyone. Or the mind says, I have decided not to give to anyone. Well, that is the mind. Watch it. Hear it. Oh, there is the mind. But what is the heart saying? What is the inspiration saying? What is your wisdom in the situation? That is service. That is the path of service. It is an expansion of your consciousness enough to be able to perceive the wisdom of the spiritual reality in every moment and respond accordingly. That is service. It is a very different definition than what you really think if you looked from the different modes. It is not the easiest thing. It is much easier to take up a precept and follow it than it is to truly expand your own consciousness and to stay awake. It is very difficult to stay awake, and yet it is the only real challenge that there is. It is the only real satisfaction that there is. And I think a lot of us feel that way. We go through our daily life and we do our best, and we find the work that satisfies us, and we find a lot of joy and all kinds of things. But throughout it all, we're looking for the ultimate spiritual reality. We're looking for the answers to the deep questions of who we are, and what, why are we here, and what is our relationship to eternality. And so I think there's a thread for most people that runs through life, and it's not like we have split personalities, but it is that we have the conditioned mind and the witness. So that the more we can identify ourselves with the soul or the eternal part of ourselves, the more the conditioned mind becomes something that we can enjoy and observe and interact with and influence, rather than the conditioned mind being the one in charge. And somehow we've lost touch then of our eternal connection. So let me have a couple more here. Purple was tonight. This one is, it's in chapter 9, it's called The Light. And this is practical paths to accessing the memory. An adult feels that they are carrying around baggage, that their life is not in the present, that they are not really able to receive the moment with a clean slate. And pretty much everyone has this experience. Once you reach adulthood, you already have all this stuff you are carrying around. And so things happen, and you have a response, and you don't really even own it. This is what happens. This is the way I am. This is what I am like. All these things are an acknowledged acceptance of the automatic response. So in these last chapters, they give us a lot of practical ways. They say accessing the memory. They give different meditations and different ways of looking at our minds chronologically and experientially that really clue us in to what are the big hooks for us. Where are our big emotional places that we get stuck? What are the memories that are influencing everything in our life? Because most of those we're unconscious to. They're below the consciousness, and they're influencing everything we do, but we decided a long time ago we really didn't want to look at those anymore, that those were painful or those were traumatic or whatever, and so they're in there and they're broadcasting, but we're not hearing them with the conscious mind. We're just influenced by these old ideas and memories. And so the guides in the last bunch of chapters really give us a lot of ways of looking at that, either individually or with help. A couple more. Many people turn to the development of their spiritual life through pain, either emotional pain or physical pain or both, because there is a certain desperation that comes with trying to alleviate pain in the body, in the mind. People will turn to the spiritual world and ask for help, and this asking is a tremendous help, a tremendous advantage. It is a tremendous opening. Again, you are engaging the spiritual world to come and help you with your process, and it is the same in working with this intentionally. If you have the intention that you want to clear the mind, just having that, right away you are starting to get help. Right away there is something developing. There is an ability developing. There is a perception of yourself that is being developed. If you are doing this process for the first time, and you are already experiencing pain and constriction in the body, and you are going to these places, and you are consciously releasing this, things can come up. Emotions can come up. You can start to cry. You can feel unconscious. You can feel afraid. You can feel like you want to stop the process and run away from the whole situation. The body can trigger great pain. And so we've all experienced this. If we look at things that we a long time ago decided we didn't want to look at, we decided that because these were painful things. But the interesting thing about going back and sweeping through the memory and bringing up these things that are developmental with us that are just slightly unconscious now is that they're not as bad from the adult waking consciousness. It's different than when you were 7 years old and your father said something to you or whatever, and you stuck it in there. But now you look back on it and you have a certain compassion for the child that you were. You have an adult understanding of the situation, and you can understand the motivations, and you're no longer the victim of that. And so just being objective in that way with these traumatic memories can diffuse their ability to control your mind. And that's huge. It's a huge thing. All of a sudden you have freedom. All of a sudden you start to think, wow, I have a choice. I wouldn't have even had this choice before. I wouldn't have even noticed this. I would have just automatically done that. But pretty soon you have some space. You have space enough to choose. So I'm going to go back to the front. When they talk about grace, you know, the guides talk about the spiritual world as a group of angelic beings, and they talk about hierarchy of the spiritual world and different elements of the spiritual world in other discourses than in this book, but they talk about these angelic beings that are just waiting for you to invite them to help. For all of humanity, they cannot impose themselves on us, but they're just waiting. And they'll say things like, as soon as you look toward the spiritual world or ask for help, it's like a light goes on, and they see it, and they immediately come to help you. They're just immediately available to us. And that's kind of what grace is. You can do all kinds of things to kind of qualify, but most of that's in the mind. We all qualify. We're all regarded in this loving way by the angelic beings. They care for everyone. So they say here, grace is not something that you cultivate. Certainly, spiritual understanding is something you can cultivate. You can cultivate regularity of your habits. You can cultivate the adherence to certain moral precepts. You can cultivate honesty where there is dishonesty. There are many good things you can cultivate, but not grace. This is something that comes inherent with the truth of God. So a simple acknowledgement of the truth of all that is brings grace into your life, gives you then a choice of whether you want to walk a material path or the path of transcendence. Your feet are still on the earth. You don't get to leave that behind until the time comes when the body falls away. Your feet being on the earth, however, doesn't mean that you have to engage and identify in the scenario that we described in the beginning of this discourse. It doesn't mean that this is your reality. Your reality then becomes one where the path is illuminated before you, where your prayers are answered, where you ask and you receive, where the light is visible to you, where you know God and the Holy Mother in your heart, and they call to you, they beckon to you. They beckon you on your journey, and they illuminate your journey for you. The guides are non-denominational. They say in the book that you don't even have to believe in God to do the work. You can be agnostic or even an atheist and still do this work with your mind, with your psychology. They refer to the spiritual world and God in here in many different ways. As light, as the truth of reality, as the Holy Mother and Father, numerous ways. And they say, basically, you don't have to believe in anything. Just start entertaining some of these ideas about how to look at reality. And start doing some of this work with your own mind. And see what happens. So they're totally all embracing. Which I've loved so much about the guides always. In my life, I've followed different paths. different spiritual paths, and I've been aligned with different things very seriously for long periods of time, long years, doing practices. But I always had this love from the guides there as a way of seeing that everybody deserves love. Everybody is equal in this. It's as though you had 10 children. You can't say, I love this one more. It's all different. You love each one differently, but you love each one. Well, they have all these millions of children, and that's what we're like for them. We're these beautiful beings unfolding, and they're just there to help us. So I wanted to read the mission of the book as the guide said it. After the book was written and the CD was recorded, a friend who had worked with me meditatively for many years offered to do a videotaped interview that I could use for promotion of the book. And as I sat down in front of the camera, the guides came through and they said this, which was news to me and I liked it a lot. So, we will just talk a little bit this morning about the flow of life, the book that has come through. And just to say that the book has a mission, and the mission is to help human beings have an understanding of their potential at this particular moment in the evolution of the soul of humanity. That is really what it is. It is a manual of greater understanding with an experiential component in the guided light meditations. And so, using the flow of life, the combination of the book and the CD, as a manual of understanding each person's relationship to the spiritual world and what the potentials are, how a person can truly be clear and be present and be able to regard and honor all that has come before in their life, in this life, and even what they brought with them into this life, and yet to be able to stand in the moment, choosing and assessing and receiving what is there for them without a lot of backlog conditioning. It is at that moment that humanity is right now, just able and looking for the opportunity to really be able to exhibit the free choice that is there inherent in this time. And so it is with our blessings and the blessings of the ages that these works come through right now as an aid to be present, to receive the spiritual inspiration that is there for them, coming from the spiritual world and just knocking on the door of all those souls that are looking for the light. Okay. So... I think we'll do one more guided light meditation, and then we can have conversation if you like, and can go from there. So this one they tell you to lay down, as I said. So if you feel like laying on the floor, go ahead. Otherwise, I'm going to sit right here.
Settle in.
And this one lasts maybe 8 minutes or 10 minutes. No. It's the Blue Pearl.
Mother and Father, please let the pure light of God flow through me. Lie down, relax, have your arms at your sides with your palms up. Close your eyes. Let your body sink into the ground. Relax. Take a few deep breaths, breathing gently in and out. Let your body sink into the ground. Relax. There is a blue light. It is coming in through your third eye, coming right in through the place between your eyebrows. You can see the blue pearl hovering out there. Now it is coming in. Take a deep breath. The blue light is filling your head. Your brain is bathed in blue, blue light, filling up your whole brain cavity, your whole skull. The light starts to move down to your jaw, and as it moves down, it turns white. A white light now, moving into your throat. It is moving in to your throat. Relax your shoulders. Relax into the ground. The white light moving down, down your shoulders, down your arms, raying out the palms of your hands. This white light is filling your chest, your heart illuminated with white light, all your chest and rib cage. This whole area is filled with white light. Your whole upper body is radiating white light. White light is pouring out of all your pores, out of the palms of your hands. Now the light is moving down into your pelvis area, filling up the whole pelvis cavity with light, pouring light out your skin. Moving down your legs, white light bathing you, pouring out the bottoms of your feet. Your whole body is immersed in white light. White light is pouring out of your body through all of your pores, the palms of your hands, the soles of your feet. Now it is going out the top of your head. The crown chakra is opening up. White light is pouring in through your crown chakra and out the rest of your body. You are immersed in the white light. Bring your mind to the place between the third eye. Hovering there above your third eye is a white pearl. Focus your consciousness now on this bluish white pearl. While your body is radiating and being bathed in white light, the bluish white pearl glowing, turning. Focus your mind there. Bring your mind back to the pearl. Suspend the effort. Just allow it. Float in this light ocean. Float in this light and cradle. see the light receding from your body now, going back through the pearl, back to the spiritual world. This meditation is cleansing and rejuvenating to the mind and the body. Blessings on the work.
Question?
Yes. Why can't we just let the white light stay in it?
Oh, you can. You can let it stay in you.
I thought, I don't want to give it back to the pearl.
You don't have to give it back. But you might have to walk out there. You want to cross the street. So you have to make sure that you're grounded. That's why there's a caution on these. You don't listen to them while you're driving the car. People would say, oh, I'll put it in the car. No. So you do have to stay grounded here in the world. Mm-hmm. Yes, Jim.
I was taken by when you were talking about the soul, and let's see if I can recollect how you put it. The soul is that which is eternal, in contrast to awareness, ordinary concept of
the mind.
The mind.
Yeah, the learned.
And I'm wondering if you could expand a little about that contrast, how they work together or don't work together.
Right. That's really the big definition there, is that the soul or the witness is the eternal aspect of yourself. It's your eternal memory. It's what goes with you when you leave the body. It's what came in when you came into the body. The mind is this learned psychology. It's what you learned from the time you took birth until right now. And so the mind is influenced by everything. Light, sound, anything that was around you, your birth, your siblings, your parents, media, just everything. All your memories. And the soul, or this eternal part of you, takes all of that in as well, incorporates all of that, but it's so much bigger than all of that. It has your whole memory from before everything, from before this lifetime, through your lifetimes. It has your future, even, is there in the eternal aspects of your soul. And so developing the witness, from my understanding, is really just aligning yourself with that part of you that's eternal, that watches the mind, that understands that the mind is conditioned by everything you've experienced. And so the witness watches the mind, and as I said earlier, it can be kind of amusing. Once you get to the place where you really can identify and you're able to look back at your mind and you see your mind having these thoughts, you know, fear or a pettiness or a judgment here, and gosh, you know, what's with the mind? Or there's the mind again, you know. But as soon as you can get that, pretty soon the mind is not in control of anything except beating the heart, keeping the lungs moving. It's not in control of you anymore. You instead see what the mind has to say, but you also come from this place of eternality, this wisdom of seeing your whole thing and everything. So this eternality. I mean, people talk about the Akashic record, and sometimes I think, you know, I call the angelic beings, I call them the guides. To me, it's a group of them, and I identify them like that. But sometimes I thought, there's a vibration there, and if you go to that vibration meditatively, you have access to all kinds of information, to a knowingness. And that's available. It's available to everybody. Just tuning in, right away, you have an extra sense of knowing what's appropriate, what's right. You know, and you can develop it by relating to this eternal part of yourself and watching your mind go through its routine. The mind is very routine. It repeats itself. It loves to repeat itself because that's what it does. It keeps your heart going. It keeps your lungs moving. That's what it's supposed to do. But it's not supposed to organize every aspect of your thoughts. Your thoughts, even though the organ of the mind is where they live, they are much broader than the physical organ of the mind. Maybe that was... Mm-hmm. Yes.
Why did you say you wrote different or channeled different chapters in different places? Were you guided to go or any particular reason?
I was guided to go. And in fact, we just came back from a trip for a month, which seemed crazy to both of us right before this book tour started, and we had so many things going. But, you know, if I'm out of context of my day-to-day life, I can just be in a space of letting this come through so much easier. So most of these meditations, I don't have that list with me, but at the back of each chapter it says where they were. Somewhere in Alaska, somewhere on the Arabian Sea, in India, somewhere in California, all different parts of California, somewhere in Hawaii. And so I have been guided to go to different places to do these channelings. And there are more coming. I feel like this is a seminal work, but we just recorded, was it 7 or 8 chapters? 7 chapters on nutrition and health. And then they started also, we did 1 chapter of another volume that's going to be about a variety of different subjects from what I understand. And the first chapter was about the cosmology of the spiritual world. And so there's all this information coming through. And I feel like, as I say, this is a seminal work. This is really helping people get to a place of being able to choose, being able to differentiate vibrationally where they are and what's coming. But there's a lot more there. And for me, being out of context seems to help just my ability to be able to just sit there. I mean, I meditate every morning, usually starting about 4 o'clock. And I meditate with people and have for many, many years. But there is something different about no telephone, there's no computer I'm checking, there's no schedule I'm doing. I'm just someplace else. And basically, I do this in the morning. The channelings come through in the morning, and then maybe we go sightseeing or, you know, but there's no routine to the day that makes it ordinary. It's extraordinary. And that seems to facilitate it. It's been compelling, as I was telling Mimi. It has been a compelling thing. My whole life, I knew that this was coming. I didn't know exactly how. And I've had a couple of really wonderful careers that I enjoyed and was completely absorbed in for long periods of time. But this is my real work, and I know it. And it just ever unfolding in incredible ways and things I would never think about myself. And yet here they come. So it's fascinating. And Bhagwan's wrapped up in it with me.
So I'm really interested in hearing more about your experience when you're transcribing or, you know, channeling.
Well, the channeling, as I say, I've been doing it my whole life. And so, but there was a time when I went through, in my late 20s, it was a long period of time, a few years, where I really developed the ability to tell, like, if I drop from one vibration to the next vibration. And at the end of that time, I got very clearly that I should start working with other people meditatively, and I did, and have for years. But before that, I never did, nor would I, because I didn't really know where I was going or what was going to come or what. So it's vibrational. It's very vibrational. When you meditate, you go to different levels of vibration. And in a sense, these different levels hold different things. And from what I understand, you get access to different levels depending on your intention, the depth of your practice, who knows what, grace. But when you go to these different levels, there's different things there. Information, the way you feel is different. And so for me, I go, when I'm channeling, like for these transmissions that come through, they come through this group of angelic beings. I know vibrationally where they are in my meditation. I only go there. If I'm channeling with people, I always go to the same place vibrationally because I feel there's integrity there. I'm not dropping. I know these angelic beings to have perfect magnanimous love for everybody. They're non-judgmental. They're all embracing. I don't fool around going to other places, you know, meditatively, especially if I'm working with other people. For myself, I have a lot of devotion, natural devotion, toward the aspect of the spiritual world that is the mother, and so I go to the mother in my own meditation a lot. And I love that vibration. It's very pure, it's very light, and that's where I go in the morning. And it's different than where I find the guides, but it's related. And so it's just really vibrational. It's the different, it's like music, or if you meditate, it deepens for you. And at first it's really distracting and it's hard and you start thinking about taking the garbage out, whatever. But after a while, when you develop it, you recognize a place and you go there again. And then if you keep going there for a while, pretty soon something else happens. You kind of pop to another place. It gets more intense. It gets more light. And then you recognize that place. And that's where you go. And that's what I found in my meditation, is that the vibration keeps intensifying or changing. And it can be long period, years, where I'll go to one place and feel like this is, you know, magnanimous everything. And then all of a sudden, I'm going to another place. And that is even higher than that one. So it's vibrational. But as I said, when I transcribed those tapes for the first time, it kind of blew my mind. What they have to say and how articulate and how pertinent everything is and how it's incredibly cosmic and at the same time, incredibly practical. You know, just... And that's kind of what they're like. You know, they talk about the truth of reality as encompassing our complete connection to the spiritual world in every aspect of our being. And yet they tell you, you know, how to disinfect the splinter that you have in your foot. So, I mean, they're just very connected to the earth and to the spirit. Yes?
Is there something like guide debt where you put yourself under the influence of, say, a group, as you call it, of guides, and sometimes, say, like when your body falls away and you go somewhere and there's a bunch of guides standing around and they say, "Who are you?" "Well, you're our pet.
No.
We've been taking care of you all that time now and you are in debt to us now." Is there a scenario like that that goes along with guides?
Well, I really...
I mean, there's got to be a reason why they're so helpful and cordial.
I really think that we can create that relationship. I mean, I think Goethe talked about it quite a bit in, making a deal with the devil. I mean, I think we can create that. We can go to a place, there are malefics. I mean, a lot of people, when they know that you're a psychic, what they want you to do is talk to the dead people. You know, there's all kinds of things going on. I think we can make deals, you know, but that's, if it feels like that, that's not the place you want to be. The guides are never like that. They're totally unconditional. They never ask for anything. Grace is free. Love is free. There's no ticket at the end. In fact, they talk quite a bit about how when you follow desire and you go after desire, you pay the price. You can have anything. You can manifest anything in your life. And we're all so aware of that right now with all these books coming out about how to manifest. You want a brand new car. You want a big house. Hey, you can have it all. We're manifesting beings. But they say clearly there's a price tag. You're going to pay for that. Energetically, you're paying for it. But if you're going to this place where really what you want is the good thing, you just want to connect with the spiritual world. You want to do your destiny. You're not asking to play the stock market or the racetrack or fill your pocket. But what you want is just really your own destiny. There's no price tag that I've seen. They're just, you know, and why are they so magnanimous and helping? It's the level they're on. And I think that they're evolving as well. But just as we're on this level, they're on that level. And that's their work. That's what they do, is help us along. But yeah, if there's a price tag, you just took a detour, is what I think. Yes. Yes.
Do you ever do healing work, or do your guides just give advice?
They give advice. I mean, energetically, I think a lot of things happen when people are meditating together. I think so. But mostly it's advice, you know, questions and answers. No, it's not laying on of hands or any of that, although I think that can be very, very valid. And I've experienced it myself with others, but I haven't done that work.
Do you meditate in groups with people?
I have, yes, meditated in groups with people, and I did my first public channeling with an Abraham Hicks study group in Hawaii. And, oh, I was so nervous. Although, you know, it's like nothing to it. It's just like I do it at home. But still, it was just so different for me. And I had no clue, you know, what it's going to be like or what. But it was great. People loved it, and everybody felt it. And so, yeah, I imagine that that's going to be happening more and more for me as I continue with this work and bring it out. I mean, I have to say, I was in the closet with this work most of my life. It's only been since I gave up my teaching and really started saying, this is my work, this is what I'm doing. I was a teacher in a Waldorf school. It has a very strong and beautiful philosophy. And I felt during all those years, 20 years, that if I were to come out in a small community where I lived as a clairvoyant, it would influence what people thought about the Waldorf school. I was the kindergarten teacher. I was the founder of the school, whatever. I kept my work quiet. I worked with individuals who heard about me. I worked with people I knew, people I didn't know. And I always meditated myself. And I followed the guidance that came. But it's only been these last few years, really, that I'm openly, you know, saying what I do and what happens. So it's new for me. And that's one of the reasons I pre-released the book in Hawaii. It's like a big family. And they'd say, what? You never told me? I've known you all these years. You know, and it was hard, but it was also freeing. So freeing. In a way, I always felt like it led a double life. You know, and only some people knew about this, which was the most expansive and important part of my life. And so it feels really good to integrate and to just be open. And I don't know where it's going to take me. Yes.
Mm-hmm. I'm new to meditation, and I feel kind of embarrassed asking this, but yeah. As far as visualizing light and, you know, the pearl and mm-hmm. the colors, it's kind of hard. Do you have any?
All I can say is that it does come. I've had so many people say things to me after a presentation like this, say things like, oh, I've tried to meditate for 20 years, I could never do it, or right, here you go. Or, you know, I hate meditation, they'll say. I hate meditation, but somehow I'm able to do it.
Thank you very much.
One woman who I've known for many years, she and her daughter split the CD. So she took one of the CDs, and her daughter took the other one, and she had taken the second one, which is the more developed and longer meditations. And then I didn't see her for about 2 months, and she said, I'm starting to see that blue pearl. So it's just a matter of kind of being aware of it. And it was interesting. These two meditations that we did tonight, I've never done in public before. I just got everything that I did tonight came this morning in meditation. And they had these themes, I thought, for this group of service, for one thing. Almost everything I read was about service. And then both of these meditations having the blue light in the head. None of the other meditations have that. So there was something specific for this group that had to do with that. But I think just practicing, you start to become much more aware.
So I'm not sure if I should try to imagine it or as a picture or just let it come.
I think imagining it there, you know.
The closing of my eyes.
Yeah, just keeping your eyes closed and just focusing yourself there, like out in front of the third eye, like out here. They had us create this art, and an artist did it for us, so that people like yourself who haven't been meditated before would have a sense of the colors and the chakras, where the chakras are, what colors align with those. And there's one meditation where they talk about the different colors and the chakras, and you start to have this feeling of energetic openings in these different areas of the body. But yeah, I would say imagine that pearl there, and eventually you'll start seeing it there. You fake it till you make it with meditation. You really do. And with intention. And with intention. Yes.
I was a question about controlling the guides. There's a story about where guides had given this couple three wishes, and the husband was all excited about it. He said, "Oh, I wish I had a pickle." And the wife got mad because the guy gave him the pickle.
Sure.
She got furious. She says, in her fury, she said, "I wish the pickle was on the end of your nose." And it went on the end of his nose. Mm-hmm. So they realized that the last wish had to be to remove the pickle completely from their life. So they could be back to the way they were. Mm-hmm. So is there a problem of, I hate to use the word manipulating and dealing with, but where you can ask the guides, what is the best way for their development that I could help them, where I don't find myself hoping that I get worldly goods, you know, that impress other people and stuff.
Well,
is that possible to ask them directly, I want to be of service to your needs, what can I do here to facilitate that?
Yeah, I think one of the things that happens if you do the psychological work is that you start to see the difference, and you start to have some choice then. And you see, okay, and even sometimes, I mean, the reality is, as I said, we can have anything we want. And certainly there have been times in my life, even after I turned my life over to the guides, where I thought, you know, I really want this. I mean, I really want this. I know that maybe it's not my destiny, but you know what? I need this. I'm going to experience this, and I'd go do it. You know, it's like if I think I don't want to eat ice cream, but then I do. You know, and so I think the big thing is really feeling that difference and making the choice. And if you're going for something that you know is a desire, at least be conscious that that's what you're doing. You know, this is my life right now. I'm going to experience this because it's undeniable for me. I'm going to do it. But at least you know it's the difference. And you can. You can know the difference. You can tell. And they talk a lot about the price tag on the desire and how the other is free. So it's a vibration. You can know when you're just working in the service of the spiritual world or the service of your own destiny or the service of humanity coming from the spiritual world or when you're really working off desire or limitation. You can know.
Would you hear something like, you're not worthy
Never.
Of helping us?
Never.
To wish for a new fancy car? You don't have the abilities to do anything for us? Would that be
I just can't imagine. Okay. I mean, I just can't imagine. You know, I mean, I've meditated with people that I maybe thought, well, geez, you know, the guides are spending time with this, but it's incredible that they do. They just seem to be very, very all-embracing. You know, no matter what, where you are, you can still turn to the spiritual world. And even if you only turn one time, 1 minute out of 24 hours, you know, maybe it'll be 2 minutes tomorrow, or it'll influence the rest of your time there. So, yeah, I think everybody's worthy. You know, I think there's forgiveness, and they talk in the book about how you suffer when you do things that you know aren't the right thing. So it's not like there's retribution someplace else. It's not like they're waiting in the spiritual world to send you to hell. It's not happening. You know, what it is that you know when you've done something wrong and you suffer it. You suffer it right there. You feel sick, you know, you feel you're ill, and it shadows your life until you somehow resurrect that. So they're not up there with an axe or some kind of fiery something. Instead, you know, they have incredible compassion, just incredible compassion for our plight and our attachments, because we all get attached here. How can we not? But seeing that the mind gets attached to things, seeing that we have these things, is everything.
Yes. So say you work with people. What do you do?
I've done different things over the course of the years. I've done one-on-one channelings for many, many years with people. People would hear about me. I never charged anything. And I've also worked with groups. When I've worked in group, so let's say teaching, I was forced to work in groups for many years. And so I would intuit what to do there. I would be in the group and I would be holding the space without even really saying. I mean, some people in the group knew, and not everybody did. But I would still be trying, at least, to be in a meditative environment that would invite the spiritual world in to help whatever was going on there to come to some kind of resolution. But working in groups can be very challenging, you know, if the focus is not on the work, but the focus is on a lot of ego, which happens. But, so I've worked individually with people, and I work with groups.
You channel for them?
I do.
Have you ever worked with people who are dying?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What do they get? Just advice and consolation?
Advice. A lot of advice. You know, it can be advice about their illness, advice about when people are ill, especially if they're seriously ill, everybody they know wants to tell them what to take, you know, and what to do and how to get over it. And so a lot of times the guides will give advice about what's really the best thing or how something will affect you. Or they can give very specific advice and also general advice. And it depends very much on what people ask, because the questions are everything. They don't offer advice unless someone's asking. They're not going to just... If I sit down with someone and I'm channeling for them, the guides are just not going to come in and tell them what they should be doing. They wait and see, what are the people asking for? And so when I do this channeling with people individually, I always say, you know, think about your questions. That's the important thing. What are your questions? Because they're not going to impose anything on you. And for a long time, over 20 years, that was how my work manifested more than any other way. Is that before school, I would spend a couple of hours in the morning channeling for people who would call me from all over the place. Now that I've been much more doing this work in public and bringing all this through, my channelings, personal channelings, have not subsided completely by any means, but less people are inspired to call me. And I'm glad. You know, I can only do so much. So it's changing. It's changing.
Yeah. When you say there's a price for the desires, how do you mean that? Because in the body you have certain natural desires and things you mm-hmm. need. You're in the body and you have to do certain things. What's the difference? What would you mean there would be a price to pay?
Well, you know the concept of karma. Mm-hmm. So you have karma. Whatever you do, there's a reaction to it. But from what the guides say, if you're on your destiny, if you're doing what you're inspired to do, and you recognize that this is really coming from inspiration, there's no karma there. You can work through your karma just by aligning yourself with your destiny and not going off because you saw on television that you really should have a brand new Cadillac. And so now you're going to work for 10 years to do that. I mean, that in itself, it's karmic. Not only are you paying for that Cadillac, but you just wasted your 10 years. You know, there's so many other things you're paying for it. where if you're on your destiny, it's not karmic. There's no price tag.
Not that there's anything wrong with having a car, because you need to get
absolutely not. Absolutely not. That's why I say we have to cross the street. And I find since I was able to turn my life over, I have a way more opulence than I ever gave myself before. You know, just because there's limitations in the mind. What we think we deserve is really calculated by the mind according to our experiences, where the spiritual world doesn't have that. They don't have those limitations. What we deserve is everything. We deserve full flowing love. And that is an amazing state, full flowing love. The guides say that's our natural state of being, flowing love. When you're in that state, everything seems pretty wonderful. Yes.
Well, the story about the car. I'm 66, and my great-grandmother, when I was small, my great-grandfather worked for Henry Ford. He was a chef on his ship. Right? And he would go to China, bring back things. And my great-grandmother couldn't get in. He had a car, a Packard or something, I don't know. And she wouldn't get in the car. She said, this is what she said, that the car is a tool of the devil and it will destroy America.
Oh, my goodness. Was she a prophet or what?
1946.
A tool of the devil. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I don't know. But, you know, the mind is small. Is compared to the soul is huge.
So you were saying earlier that the book can be beneficial to people of all like religious beliefs, even atheists. Mm-hmm. And I struggle personally with a lot of the issues that you're talking about when I'm an atheist. And so mm-hmm. I'm curious whether or not I will benefit from your book, because I just don't believe in the spiritual world. I don't understand what people mean when they talk about mm-hmm. it, and it's really like something that I don't consider myself connected to. But when I hear you speak, it's very meaningful to me, because I struggle with a lot of the issues that you speak with. And mm-hmm. it's funny, because when you were talking, Chelsea and I have been talking about a lot of these things today on mm-hmm. various occasions. So I'm just curious, like, you know, what you have to say to me.
Yeah, the guides say very clearly you don't have to believe in anything to do this work, because a lot of this work, it's setting you up to clear your mind. It's setting you up to differentiate between inspiration and desire. That's what it is. And so whatever you think inspiration is, I'm sure you don't have to believe in God to have inspiration in your life. There's times when you're attracted to something undeniably, and it's not from the desire realm. It doesn't even make sense. It might not even be practical at all. But there you go. So that's really what it's about. There's no indoctrination in the book or any kind of philosophy that says you should be one religion or one practice or this is God or that's God or even that God is. It's just really about helping you differentiate in the mind about what's learned and what's eternal there. And even eternal, I mean, I have to say my son-in-law is an atheist. And for me to deal with that, I mean, my daughter's raised with me, you know, always spirituality, channeling her whole life. And she marries an atheist. I mean, it's just, you know, beyond me. And yet, you know, I've channeled for him a couple of times. Now, who he thinks I'm talking to, I don't know.
Okay, so in my mind, you know, as an atheist, in my mind, it's not like a judgmental thing. In my mind, I'm like, okay, you know, she talks about vibration. There's
right.
an explanation for the experience of the vibration that is bringing you to a place where you are understanding what is beneficial in your own life. That is, that you are articulating through the guides. I mean, there are like atheist like justifications for it, but I was just curious, like, you know.
Right.
It's important that you understand that, I'm sure that he's not, like, judgmental or anything.
No,
well,
he's beautiful.
I'm definitely not.
He's fantastic. He's a physicist. And so Bhagwan has a thing with him now. It's like, well, it's just about energy that we don't have an instrument to measure yet. And so that works, you know, that works.
Right.
And as I said earlier, I call them the guides, and that's how I relate to it. I relate to the mother as an archetype of the spiritual world. But I've also entertained the idea that there's a vibration there. If you go to that vibration, you're going to know these things. You'll have access to things because there's information there. Whether you want to call it Akashic Record, whatever you want to call it, it's there, and you don't have to believe it's anybody or anything to go there. But you do seem to have to want to be pure at heart. You know, and many atheists are very pure at heart. Many atheists are very extremely moral, even dogmatically so. Is you know, it becomes a religion in itself. So, yeah, you don't have to believe anything. You just have to want to know the good, the best, or know the truth, whatever that is for you. You know, and with that, unqualified, that you just really want to know the truth of reality. You want to know your destiny. You want to know the right thing, the good thing. That's as far as you have to go. You don't have to align.
Are you going to be here for a little while? Are you doing any channelings while you're here, or are you going to be leaving shortly?
Well, I live in San Francisco, and I go back and forth to Hawaii, so I am around. I am going on a book tour. I'm going to be in and out. But my life is kind of always like that right now, these last years. I move around a lot. I go back and forth. And it doesn't seem like that's going to stop.
I was just thinking there's a Friday afternoon tea clutch here.
Oh.
Come to our tea party.
Where? Here in the bookstore? Oh, nice.
Tomorrow afternoon.
I'm actually at the New Living Expo tomorrow. But talk to Jim. Maybe he'll invite me.
Are you familiar with who is it who does the angelic Doreen Justice or something? Are your angelic guides? I just happen to have heard a program with her, like hers, or
I don't know
similar.
Her.
Oh.
I don't know who she is.
Doreen Virtue.
Does the angelic, but she was saying the same thing. They don't care if you believe in them or not. If you say, well, I want some help or ask for a guide, they don't care.
Mm-hmm.
It's their job to help you.
Yeah, I think you can qualify different philosophies just by that. Is there a price tag? Do you have to align with one thing? If those things are there, nah, that's not it. You know, is it free? Is it all embracing? Is it not judgmental and loving? Yeah. Okay, so I think it's not that hard to qualify. You know, even in my life, as I say, I was raised a Catholic. My parents are from Italy. You're born a Catholic. There's no way out of that. And, you know, I mean, there can be beautiful things. You know, I loved the Holy Mother and all that stuff growing up. I was a Hindu for many years. And I was an anthroposophist for many years. You know, in all of it, what's the defining, what's the criteria? It is, you know, is it expansive? You know, is it all embracing? You know, and that's about it, you know. So. Okay, Jim has some more things to say to us.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.